Okay, so next we have Louise Amore from Durham, and her paper is buried somewhere. We have Louise Amore from Durham University, whose paper is entitled Digital Aesthetics, Securities Objects and the Form of Politics.
Thank you, Nick. I want to begin just by thanking Shirin for the invitation and prompting me really to think again about aesthetics. My paper speaks to one small part of the chapter in a book that I've recently completed, where I try to think about the kind of capacities of digital aesthetics, really, and what this might mean for how we think about the power of contemporary security interventions. And really the provocation for this began when, as part of a research project with my colleague in Amsterdam, Enrico de Horda, Data Wars project, we were talking to some software designers about how they create and rewrite lines of code designed to draw together the elements of, for example, past financial transactions, credit card transactions, past patterns of travel and so on, in order to identify persons of interest. So for me, this is it's an aesthetic problem in one sense. It's a particular, as Jacques Rancière would understand it, a particular distribution of the sensible. How is our attention drawn to a particular individual? And what struck us here was that when we asked the software engineer how he knew when his code was complete, how he knew when it was ready, he was writing a series of code for the South African government to use when they were running the World Cup, so how border guards at airports would know who the persons of interest would be as they entered the country. And what we expected was some kind of allusion to techno-science, to mathematics or science, but actually what he said was it needs to look pretty, it needs to look right. You know, he knew when it was not working, he considered this to be a beautiful thing, his line of code. So for this, for us, this was really provoking the question of how we think about, I suppose, data aesthetics or the politics of data aesthetics, when security becomes a question of joining the dots of mundane transactions. This could be credit card transactions, flight bookings, and so on, producing risk models and new objects that kind of go out into the world. This creates new capacities for security interventions to freeze someone's assets, to deport someone, to screen them, to detain them, perhaps to present them before a British court because they apparently threaten national security. So these are not simply lines of code. They're also, in one sense, affective. They both have the capacity to affect and be affected by the perceptions of a whole series of people and things. So what I want to try and think through in this paper, I suppose, is the and, as you have it in this workshop title, the power and protest. Because for me, this digital aesthetics has always both co-present, the capacity for power and for resistance. And so in this sense, with Jacques Rancière, of course, aesthetics is a particular distribution of sensible and politics is a particular distribution of sensible. So how should we understand this relation between politics and aesthetics in these terms? And it may seem peculiar, but I've tried to find a vocabulary for this, drawing on some of the work of William Hogarth, so 18th century artist, who depicted a line of beauty that I want to say has something that resonates with this idea of a beautiful line of code. So for him, the serpentine line, he said, was not only a figure of beauty, but the whole order of form. And so in Hogarth's work, we see a kind of emergent modern struggle for an objective aesthetic, an ordering of sense data, you might say, where the whole of an object becomes graspable through the elements that join together its outline. So I'm not going to read it, but you can see in the quote, its contents are scooped out, corresponding surfaces, fine threads closely connected, imagination entering the vacant space, viewing the whole. for me, these might almost have been the words of the software code designer who was seeing a beauty in his line of code. So should we begin to think, well, this doesn't really have any, has nothing at stake in this? I just want to give you a few lines from an interview with the same company, iDetect, from 2009. So this is how they think a subject of interest would emerge through this particular sort of risk practices. So Osama bin Laden's third cousin, whose name you don't know, came out of a terrorist training boot camp in Pakistan, Afghanistan, or somewhere else. You don't know him. He's never committed a crime. He's not on a watch list. But there could be highly, there could be elements of data in his passenger name record, this is his past travel transactions, that set off red flags. So I want to suggest then that this is also a particular distribution of the sensible. How does a person of interest come to attention? How do we give our attention and attentiveness to a particular individual? There's a kind of sifting and arraying of elements, if you like, that I want to say have a political aesthetic. So how does Hogarth help us in this? I'm not sure he does, actually. But what's interesting about Hogarth, in terms of thinking about the English art scene for 1720s and 30s, is the beginnings, if you like, of thinking about a growth of, I think, an aesthetics of population. So we might want to think then of the bell curve of the idea of a standard distribution, that the population will cluster in this way, will distribute in this way, that aesthetics of the bell curve has a very important role in terms of thinking about politics and power over a long period of time. And for Hogarth, as Frederick Auger describes it, this was a kind of aesthetic program. It was possible to reveal a code of beauty, a means of ordering what he called compositional grammar, at the heart of which is his line of beauty, the serpentine line in Phaedo. But he would extend this also to the lines in human bodies, household objects, architecture, and garden design. For Hogarth, there are rules to be found in infinite variety, a way of bringing order to disorder. So I want to suggest then that there are broadly three resonances between this compositional grammar in Hogarth and the kind of specifics of aesthetics in contemporary security data. And the first is about the emptiness of the object, the inward contents having been scooped out. So in Hogarth, the materiality of the object, there's a kind of indifference in a sense to the materiality of the object. It would scarcely matter whether the chair leg was carved from wood or cast in metal. What matters instead is the form itself. And this is echoed in the relationship between the writing of this security code. It's a derivative of something to which it is broadly indifferent. What matters is the capacity for a political form to emerge in the relation between the elements, not how it came about, not why somebody spent 3 months in Pakistan, but simply that can be associated with a whole series of other elements. And so, and this is my second resonance, the interest is in the shell, it's in the profile of the object itself. And so our conventional social science language of profiling, in effect, becomes something which is actually much more about the profile or the surface data. And of course, we can see this in the history of biometrics also, and biometry, so sort of Francis Galton's 19th century sense of composite portraits, as he described it, where he layered multiple images of past criminals in order to come up with an overall outline of what the biometry of a criminal disposition might look like, indifferent to the layers of the composite portraits that have produced this, you know, incipient criminality, if you like. And finally, with the relations of the object. So for Hogarth, the objects are shells composed of lines connected together. And what he tried to do in his work was to talk about a kind of an aesthetics of movement, really. And so he talked about how the eye delights, he says, in winding walks, serpentine rivers, and objects whose forms are composed principally of waving and serpentine lines. And so even in his, you can see here, 1733 image from Southwark Fair,
So it appears to be a kind of classic Hogarthian sense of the kind of chaos of the street. You can see the stage with the players that's collapsing on the left of the scene there. But if you follow the data points, the sense data points of the crowd themselves form a serpentine line. So you see how they move behind the building. And so in this image, you have a kind of sense of chaotic population and disorder in the London streets, but the capacity to have some sense of order in the connection between the points. Right, I'm going to stretch this far too far now and say that that's more or less the logic, the kind of aesthetic logic of contemporary forms of taking large volumes of crowd data and saying we can see when there's going to be a suicide bomber in a football stadium by saying there are anomalies in the movements of people in the crowd. So by drawing on data elements to say, and this is a from Project Instinct, which the Home Office is running, take crowd volume and flow data at specific points and use it to predict how the crowd will flow through the location. So for Hogarth, the object is emptied of its materiality. Beauty is achieved through this emptying. I want to propose that actually in the writing of this kind of software code, there is a similar emptying of the materiality of that object, an interest in the form for the sake of form itself. Now, this raises, though, then for us, I think, a problem with regard to politics, with regard to resistance, or with regard to publics, how we think about public engagement. And for this, I want to just turn to some of the work of Lorraine Daston, historian of science, who has given some fantastic accounts in her work on what she calls things that talk. So how in the design of a particular aesthetic object, and there's a fantastic chapter in her book on things that talk about the design of botanical models of glass flowers. And what she wants to say is that these things may have this aesthetic quality, but they will always then go out into the world and do other things that were never a part of their design. They will exceed and overflow the outlines that were so important in this kind of aesthetic. So Daston talks about potentially active agents that engage with viewers as if they were the persons and their viewers were mere things. And we can see it, I think, even in this design of software code. So in one sense, for the iDetect team, biometric identifiers talk to a departure control system, talk to the risk algorithm, and talk to the border guard. So I suppose what I want to suggest here is that they talk in ways that exceed their design. And so here, for me, is the capacity for thinking about a different, if you like, what Rancière calls a redistribution of the sensible, how we might think about a shifting relation between those points and lines, which is never part of the initial code itself. There's a tension in this kind of tuning and talking. So could it be then that the kind of apparent mastery of an aesthetics of security by technoscience, precisely because the things talk, materializes then in another form of life, another way of thinking about the unexpected things that happen. So what happens to this software code is it lands in places that couldn't be anticipated, it talks to other objects and to people, and it lives on and acts in the world in a particular way. So following Heidegger, the thingness of the thing, if you like, is its power to gather other elements around it. And actually this struck me in relation to Shirin's work on parliaments. And I was thinking about Latour and the parliament of things. The capacity of some of these things to gather other communities around themselves, the kind of community of things. So an assembly of multiple elements that we see in this aesthetics of code is present also in the capacity to think about a redistribution of those particular elements. They do unexpected things with unexpected effects. Stop the wrong person at the border, fail to stop the right person at the border, let false positives loose in the world in ways that they could never have anticipated, invite some kinds of intuitive aesthetic responses and banish others, make some people visible and others not. But then is the question about the capacity to, I suppose, arrange the elements differently. And I think this is where we really encounter the problem. Because if we're going to say with Rancière that both art and politics concern a distribution of the sensible, then we'd have to think about what the specific arrangement of those elements might be. How is it that some things and people can be seen, others cannot? Some political claims can be made and others cannot. And in a sense, then, the question is not how ought the relation between politics and art be rendered, or what should art do politically, but actually the radical undecidability of both politics and art. So while the data aesthetics of security claims to make everything decidable according to a risk score, it is also, though, a particular specific arrangement of elements. And it is a contingent arrangement of elements. It's one specific distribution of the sensible, a distribution that I've suggested has potentials that exceed its design. So is there, I'm asked this all the time, is there a distinction? How do we make the distinction then between the particular arrangement of elements in the security, the writing of the code, and the way that we might want to politically intervene and arrange those elements differently? Is there a difference? And I think I want to try to suggest that what the writing of the code does in its arrangement of elements is actively, in its own workings, conceals its process. So by the time that line of code is written, it appears as a risk flag on a border guard screen. And those multiple layers of translation and mediation that have taken place become extremely difficult to excavate. And I want to point to some really nice work by Pakistani artist Bani Abidi, who in her security barriers A to L distributes, I suppose, a matrix of images of security barriers. And in one sense, like the kinds of data that I've talked about, Abidi's images are also derivative. So they undergo multiple layers of abstraction, disaggregation and reassembly. They do lose contact with their context and spatiality. She begins by taking photographs of security barriers in situated places in Karachi. But then she writes out that background, translates these into prints that that have clean lines and outlines, actually, that begin to look just like commodities on a shelf. And she talks about this, actually, in interviews, about how they begin to look like desirable objects. And she produces them then on a digital printer that somehow seem to kind of flatten the image itself. So I want to suggest that what she does, in a sense, is redistribute the sensible in a way that makes possible another form of attentiveness. Like, they look like gleaming consumer products on a shelf, and they invite a kind of commercial desire. I remember Foucault writing about the security apparatus says, this is not an apparatus that says no. It's not an apparatus that prohibits. It's an apparatus that says yes to desire. And I think there's something about her security barriers somehow say yes to desire. So what I want to say is that perhaps these kinds of artistic practices, they also assemble a particular kind of aesthetics. What can be seen, what can be acted upon, who can be visible, what kinds of claims can be made. But perhaps this is one which displays the process itself. It shows its own contingency and potentially also the contingency of the security intervention itself. So I want to conclude then. Do I have 2 minutes? 2 minutes, Nick. Conclude with 3 points, really. The first is that aesthetics is always already political, precisely because it concerns a regime of visuality. And when I was really trying to think about the themes of this workshop, I really kept thinking about Jonathan Crary's points about visuality and images, where he says it's not about the image or about visuality, it's about ways of seeing. And those ways of seeing necessarily involve a nesting of the senses in which touch and, you know, multiple kinds of sensoria are involved in that aesthetic response. How does a particular mode of attentiveness become possible? How is the world made visualizable and actionable? And the second is really, I think, because I'm a geographer, a problem with space, a problem with how we think about the relationship between what we tend to conventionally think about as spaces of state power and some kind of grassroots protest and activism. Because for me, as soon as we begin to think about the politics of aesthetics, that sense of spatiality is collapsed to a certain extent. That instead then we have a spatial organising of aesthetics in which both the sovereign capacity for an aesthetics which allows particular security interventions to take place is configured around a point-to-point gathering of elements, and the capacity for what we might even think of as being grassroots movements precisely also have an aesthetics which is about the gathering of point-to-point elements. So one example of that in sort of empirical terms might be thinking about social network forms of association, because there's no doubt that security algorithm I was talking about, it's a form of social network analysis. It's about gathering together elements in a particular way that makes a security action or intervention possible. Now, arguably, those kinds of social network relations are also important to new and perhaps more progressive interventions in what the history of a particular city might be. So, you know, there's been examples of art experiments in South African cities that rewrite a particular history using social network media. So in both senses, the gathering of elements is the unavoidable aesthetic problem to grapple with, and they're very tied together and proximate. And so this is my final point, 10 seconds. We need to rethink then how we imagine the politics of associational life. That for me is the political terrain, how we think the politics of associational life, because much of the critique of this kind of security practice that I'm interested in is about, well, human rights, you know, protect privacy, protect civil liberties, show how these algorithms rhythms include racial characteristics and assumptions about ethnic practices and so on. And that's important, of course. But what's missed there is that what is being acted upon is really the capacity of people to associate with other people and things in ways that do not infer a particular future that will take place, to infer that someone may pose a security threat, for example. So how do we think that politics of associational life in a way that imagines an aesthetics of association which remains open to potential futures that have not yet been thought? I'm sorry, I've gone over my time. Sorry.